It's Tuesday, April 14th, 2009, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville. Produced and distributed by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C., this is your normal daily audio stash, the growing truth about cannabis. Welcome to the most popular podcast regarding marijuana in all of America and all the world, featuring interviews with scientists, politicians, doctors, prohibition policy activists, regular cannabis consumers, musicians, and Normal's staff and Normal's board of directors, along with music and comedy no other podcast can offer. You can always find out more about our show at our website, stash.normal.org. and continue the education and conversation on our blog as well. We're ending marijuana prohibition with education, one listener at a time. The podcasting and blogging technology for the Normal Daily Audio Stash is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. For your professional web design needs, visit redaphid.com. Good day, Stashers, and welcome to the podcast. Seems like everybody's ramping up for the 420 weekend, and here at Normal, things are no different. Tomorrow on tax day, Alan St. Pierre is going to be on the steps of the post office in Manhattan to deliver a $14 billion check representing the tax revenue and the savings from law enforcement that could be reaped if we would just end this stupid marijuana prohibition. And of course, on the 420 weekend, there's all sorts of festivals and protests and events that are taking place on Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and Monday. They're all over our activist agenda calendar at stash.normal.org/agenda. And if you've got one you need to get put on the calendar, send it to me at stash@normal.org and I'll get it up there as soon as I can. Now, it was kind of like Christmas for me today when I went to my post office box for the stash. As you may know, I am sponsored by a glass blower in Bend, Oregon. The company goes by the name of Starfish Designs, and you can reach them by dialing 541-788-GLASS. That's right, an actual sponsorship. They send me a free pipe a month, and I talk about them and show them to people when I meet them at the various festivals and such. It's an amazing deal. I was kind of joking when I mentioned it, and he thought it was a good idea and started it. Well, when I got to my box today, I realized that he had sent me the entire sponsorship amount for the rest of 2009, and I imagine he did so to save on shipping costs. Might as well ship them all in one box rather than once a month. But now I am just swimming in a sea of fantastic glass art, functional glass art, I might add, holding in my hands right now a green piece of glass that is shaped like a hand grenade. It's got a big hole on the bottom, what looks to be a carb on the side, and a bowl at the top. It's a smoking grenade, I guess. Anyway, that's Starfish Designs out of Bend, Oregon. I want to thank Andy, the owner and artist, who put those wonderful pieces of glass together. And folks, if you get to meet me out at a hemp fest or a normal conference, I'll have them on me so you can take a look at them. Again, the phone number there is 541-788-GLASS. Give them a call. They'll send you a catalog and you can order from there. All right. Now, coming up on today's Daily Audio Stash, we've got your hemp headlines, including a follow-up on the Derek Kopp case, specifically the sheriff's deputy and the charges he is facing for shooting Derek Kopp point blank in the chest. Today's our government at work day, so we're going to get some updates on medical marijuana bills going through the various state legislatures. First, we'll be speaking with Dan Lynn from Illinois Normal for the Illinois bills. And then after the musical break, we'll speak with Chris DeLaForest from the great state of Minnesota. And speaking of the musical break, our daily Toker Tunes brought to you by MarijuanaMusicAwards.com. We've got Variety Tuesday featuring some country swing from Texas with Sean Reefer and the Resin Valley Boys, a tune called Sweet Hydro. The Stash is the gathering place for cannabis consumers from all walks of life, and we're glad to have you here. It's time for your Normal Daily Audio Stash.
Hello, I'm Paul Stanford from the Hemp and Cannabis Foundation, or THCF. Medical marijuana is legal in 13 states today, and THCF has clinics in 8 of those states. Our doctors help qualified patients obtain an authorization for medical marijuana in their state. Patients are eligible for medical marijuana with a history of either severe chronic pain and or nausea, cancer, AIDS or HIV, hepatitis, glaucoma, seizure disorders like epilepsy, chronic muscle spasms such as in multiple sclerosis or asthma, neurodegenerative diseases such as Alzheimer's, and gastrointestinal disorders like IBS or Crohn's disease. If you or someone you know has one of these conditions, our doctors will help you obtain a permit for medical marijuana. THCF Medical Clinics has offices in Washington State, Oregon, California, Colorado, Hawaii, Nevada, Montana, and now Michigan. Call 1-800-723-0188 or go to the web at hemp.org or 1-800-723-0188.
Now it's time to take a look at the latest stories about marijuana from news organizations across America and around the world in our normal daily audio stash, Hemp Headlines. For today's Hemp Headlines, I want to feature 3 stories that are follow-ups on the case of Derek Kopp, the student at Grand Valley State University in Michigan, who was shot point blank in the chest as 5 officers from the Western Michigan Enforcement Team served a drug possession warrant at night at his back door of his off-campus apartment. The first story talks about how the sheriff's deputy, Ryan Scott Huizenga, is facing 2 years for shooting Derek Kopp in his home. An arrest warrant was issued last week for Ottawa County Sheriff's Deputy Ryan Scott Huizenga in connection with the shooting of a Grand Valley State University student while Huizenga was executing a search warrant on March 11th with the West Michigan Enforcement Team. The state police investigation focused on whether or not Huizenga should have had his finger on the trigger of his department-issued Glock 40 caliber handgun or on the outside of the trigger guard as he approached the apartment. During the warrant hearing last week with Judge Knoll, Michigan State Police Lieutenant Kurt Schramm said that, in his opinion, Huizenga should not have had his finger on the trigger. Quote, "Based on my investigation, Derek Kopp posed no threat to the officers, including Ryan Huizenga, and that his finger should have been on the outside of the trigger guard, not on the trigger, unless he was intending to shoot." End quote. District Court Judge Bradley Knoll issued the warrant to charge Huizenga with 1 count of careless discharge of a firearm after an 8-minute review of the investigation of the case. Huizenga was out of the state on a planned vacation when the warrant was issued, according to the court documents, and has told Michigan State police officers he will turn himself in as soon as he returns. A personal recognizance bond was set at $10,000. So, Officer Huizenga is not charged with attempted murder, manslaughter, negligent manslaughter, assault. He's simply charged with not exercising control of his index finger. Have you ever heard of a pot smoker, much less an attempted murderer, getting to finish his vacation before turning himself in? According to the records, the WeMet team went to Derek's apartment to serve a warrant for drug possession. They approached the ground floor apartment from the back and were about to open a sliding glass door. Another deputy was shining a flashlight into the dark apartment when Kopp approached the door, pulled back the curtains, and raised his arm to shield his eyes from the light. It was at that point that Huizenga discharged his weapon, according to state police investigators who talked to several witnesses who were at the scene. Kopp was struck with the single round to the chest from Huizenga's weapon. Huizenga couldn't have been startled, since Derek had time to, quote, pull back the curtains and raise his arm to shield his eyes, end quote. And this is no rookie cop either. Huizenga, age 37, has been on the Ottawa County Sheriff's Department for 12 years, and for the last 2 years was assigned to the West Michigan Enforcement Team. Now, if he's found guilty of these charges, the maximum he could receive is 2 years in prison. That's the same possible sentence as a marijuana user faces for simple possession in a public or private park. He could also get another job as a police officer if he gets a lenient enough sentence and parole. This is the nature of our drug war. Pot smokers are the most hunted minority in the United States. We're given draconian sentences for minor infractions, and if our rights and lives are threatened, those who exert terror and brutality against us are given praise and sympathy. Derek isn't any different than you or me. The only difference is that they came to his door a few weeks ago. They will eventually come to your door unless you decide to do something now. So I had read that story and was just posting it when I caught another one from the Department of Adding Insult to Injury. Deputy Ryan Huizenga supporters to rally. Supporters of Deputy Ryan Huizenga will rally outside the Ottawa County Sheriff's Office on Thursday, according to several Facebook groups created by friends and family of the deputy. The rally is from 11 a.m. until 1 p.m. at the Sheriff's Office, 12-220 Fillmore Street. Organizers describe the event not as a protest or picket, but an opportunity to thank members of law enforcement for protecting the community. From young men sitting in their off-campus apartment late at night, minding their own business, not even smoking marijuana at the time, and possessing only a few tablespoons? Yeah, thanks for that protection. We sure need that. Huizenga, age 37, was arraigned Monday on a charge of careless use of a firearm for allegedly shooting and wounding college student Derek Kopp, age 20, during a March 11th drug raid at Kopp's off-campus apartment near Grand Valley State University. Allegedly shooting and wounding? Is that an alleged gunshot wound to the chest that allegedly sent Derek to the hospital where doctors allegedly removed an alleged police-issue bullet from an alleged police-issue handgun allegedly belonging to Deputy Ryan Huizenga? You can allege whether the shooting was careless, but the shooting isn't a figment of anyone's imagination, and Derek wasn't armed. Plus, it wasn't a drug raid. It was a marijuana raid. No drugs were found. This isn't Tony Montana sitting behind a pile of cocaine in his Miami mansion with a couple of his little friends. This is the off-campus college apartment of a 20-year-old student. What anonymous tip, what surveillance, what investigation turned up the key piece of information that led you to believe it was necessary to send five We Met deputies to the back sliding glass door of an apartment at night with guns drawn? None. Nothing. Nada. This is just standard operating procedure in America. If we think you have weed, if we catch some dope smoker who flips on you, regardless if there's a chance in hell he's telling the truth, if we think you're using too much electricity or your walls seem too warm, we will come to your house in the middle of the night, lob grenades into your home, shoot your dogs, tie you up to sit in their blood, put our knees into your back while we point assault weapons at your head, take away your screaming children, take anything we see that we like, and destroy the rest, and if we're feeling froggy, we just might shoot and kill you. And don't think, well, I don't smoke pot, so I don't care, because sometimes we get the wrong address on the warrant. Now, instead, if you'd like to bring home a case of beer, get shit-faced drunk, and beat your wife, if we get a call about that, we'll send a couple of deputies over and knock politely on your door. And if she's sobbing, bruised, and bloody, but refuses to press charges, we'll just be on our way. You have a nice night, sir. It's not a war on drugs. It's a war on Americans who picked the wrong drug. It's a demonizing and a dehumanizing of drug users that leads to the logical conclusion of sending in well-armed task forces into people's homes to save our society from these diseased vermin and dangerous animals. It's a picture conjured of vampiric cocaine fiends and zombie heroin junkies. You know, the tiny few who do become desperately addicted. Oh, plus the gun violence of the few brought about by Prohibition, all mixed together for a broad brush called drugs that is painted over even the successful casual nonviolent marijuana smoker. It's telling that the outrage is more over the absurdly light potential sentence then the sending of armed police, guns drawn at night, to shine their lights in citizens' homes over enough pot for a joint or two. And the final story, after I compose that rant, Deputy Ryan Huizenga back on the job at Ottawa County Sheriff's Department. Deputy Ryan Huizenga will return to work at the Ottawa County Sheriff's Office this morning, April 14th, under Sheriff Greg Steigenga, said Tuesday. Huizenga will be assigned to administrative duties while the department continues its internal review of the March 11th incident, in which Huizenga shot and wounded an unarmed college student, Derek Kopp, during a drug raid at Kopp's off-campus apartment. Huizenga was originally placed on unpaid leave on Monday, April 6th, following the announcement that he would be charged with careless use of a firearm. He was arraigned on that charge Monday, April 13, in Holland District Court. Well, of course, innocent until proven guilty and all that. I mean, besides, if he's behind a desk, maybe he won't shoot any more unarmed pot smokers. But where it really gets fun is to read some of the comments from the local Michigan readers on the website.
It is unfortunate that there are those who want to continue to vilify an otherwise good person over an accident and a blip in his apparently normal good judgment.
Being a deputy is a job, not a favorite pastime or hobby. No different than any of us, he gets up and goes to work. The only difference is he has contact with the public and the machine he is in charge of is on his belt. But in the end, he was just doing his job and had an accident. The only difference between him and us is his bosses are the justice system and he's being tried in the papers. And that, my friends, in itself should be a crime.
The search warrant to raid Kopp's home was legitimate and was based on previous marijuana sales at his apartment. Plain and simple, he's a drug dealer. Maybe a small one, but still a drug dealer.
I'm certain that Officer Huizenga was operating under the premise that there was more than 2 teaspoons of pot involved.
You may think I'm pissed at Deputy Ryan Huizenga, but really, you could plug in any police officer's name from any of the countless stories of these paramilitary marijuana raids, and it would still be the same. This story differs in that the victim lived and had such an absurdly low amount of pot, but I see comments like these on drug raid stories all the time, all with the theme of, well, the cops are just doing their job, or, well, those people knew doing drugs was dangerous, to soothe away any recognition that we've come to a place in America where we believe it is normal and necessary to send armed urban warriors of the state to break down people's doors for smoking pot in their own home.
He's a drug dealer.
But what exactly is that? I had a friend in Idaho who was my guy. He grew weed. I'd buy some. He was married, employed, paid taxes. I mean, at least on his legit income. He sold to me and maybe a few others, just a hobby to make money on the side. Now he's doing time as a drug dealer, and he's cellmates with a member of the Mexican Mafia who has numerous assaults and thefts and one manslaughter on his record, but is currently doing time as a drug dealer for trafficking in hundreds of pounds of crystal meth. They're both drug dealers, but there's only one of them I'd trust in my home. My drug dealer wasn't taking advantage of my addiction by turning me into a meth freak or a crackhead. We were old buddies from the music scene who both liked to smoke pot. But because we envision the Tony Montanas and the Pablo Escobars and call every young person shuffling a dime bag a drug dealer, and because we parade the faces of meth and the homeless junkies on the streets on our TVs and call every college kid smoking a joint a drug user, it's all justified. It's all okay. It's just Deputy Huizenga doing his job and, oops, having an accident at work. Instead of the inevitable tragedy that is going to occur when you put well-armed men in unnecessarily high-stress environments in the dark over pot.
Dear Mr. President, Last November, you were elected on a platform of change. You promised the country reform on the political system. Well, let me tell you what Normal.org and many other Americans want changed. Marijuana laws. It was estimated that America made its 20 millionth arrest for marijuana possession this year. You want a real economic problem? How about the amount of money being spent on simple possession arrests? Incarcerating people costs taxpayers around $23,000 per year, and Normal estimates that up to $10 billion a year are spent on enforcement for mostly nonviolent offenders. Now let's imagine what would happen if marijuana was legal. Not only would we save billions each year on enforcement, but imagine the economic boost. You would produce jobs growing, selling, and tax dollars coming in from the regulation of marijuana. I'm not saying let people loose to sell on the streets. Put government regulation into tax and control at sales like alcohol. Street dealers are the problem, not a guy with a gram in his pocket. Put in harsh punishments for people who drive under the influence, and stop punishing people who enjoy marijuana safely in their home. Mr. President, if you really want change, legalize marijuana.
Tuesday is our look at your government at work, here at the Audio Stash. While the inevitable re-legalization of cannabis hemp will have to happen at the federal level, the steps leading to that destination take place at the state and municipal levels. We focus in on the initiatives, bills, and amendments regarding cannabis across all 50 states, and what activists like you are doing to enact a positive reform to our cruel and outdated marijuana laws. Body dies, the ego cries, the birds they sing, the creatures learn. It's an honest day's work, yeah, 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 yeah. If you're working hard to make an impact in your city and state, please email us at stash@normal.org and let's share your local efforts with the worldwide cannabis community. Together, we can affect our government at work.
So many different states are working on marijuana legislation this year. It seems like a kind of a landslide of marijuana legislation, and trying to keep track of it can be very daunting. But here to join us from the state of Illinois and Illinois Normal is Dan Lynn to give us an update on the state of marijuana reform in Illinois. So, Dan, welcome back to the Stash.
Oh, thank you for having me, Russ. It's always fun to be on the Daily Audio Stash.
You know, we've been tracking medical marijuana in Illinois. Give us an update. What's happening now? Where are we at? And what do the chances look like?
Well, as of last week, we were able to get our Senate Bill 1381, the Compassionate Use of Medical Cannabis Pilot Program Act, passed out of a Senate Public Health Committee. So now we have a Senate bill as well as a House bill awaiting full floor votes in the Illinois legislature. And we've been working hard down in Springfield at the state capitol trying to make sure that we have the votes needed to get this legislation passed this year.
So it's just still happening on the Senate side. Anything on the other side of your legislature?
Yes, we do have a twin bill in the House of Representatives. That's House Bill 2514. And that bill was passed out of a House Human Services Committee about 3 weeks ago, and that was the first time that we were ever able to get a House bill out of committee for medical cannabis in Illinois. So that was kind of a landmark moment for us, and now we're working in both chambers down there to get the votes needed to pass this legislation.
Excellent. Are there any other committee hearings that are necessary for these two bills?
There have been a few minor amendments to the Senate bill, and those amendments will need to go through a committee. But usually once when the bill itself has been out of committee, unless these amendments are very controversial, the committees usually will just kind of forward them out along with the bill.
What do you think the chances look like in your assemblies there when they come up to a full vote? How does this issue break down politically in Illinois?
Well, politically, it kind of goes down the party lines with the majority of the Democrats supporting us and the Republicans siding with law enforcement against us. However, there are a few Republicans that are willing to cross the aisle and help us out and vote with us on this. In the House, we have a co-sponsor who is a Republican. But otherwise, it's generally the Republicans listen to the law enforcement's absurd claims about what this program would do in Illinois, and the Democrats are, with us on this.
How about the reaction from the public? Do they fall for these absurd law enforcement claims?
I would not say that the public really is very well aware of these claims, because normally the law enforcement are making these claims at the committee hearings or when they're talking with the legislators down at the Capitol. So I think unless if the constituents and the people of Illinois are actually at those meetings or in the hallways of the Capitol, they're probably not too aware of what these law enforcement officers are saying. The one exception would be when we do have some press coverage and some of the newspapers will quote the law enforcement officers, or they'll quote some of the legislators who are almost regurgitating what the law enforcement officers said.
You know, I imagine that what law enforcement in Illinois is saying is probably very similar to what I've heard in other states, that if we legalize medical marijuana, kids will be smoking dope in the high school classrooms and the sky will fall and crime will go up and all of these things.
Not only would the children in Illinois be smoking dope are the claims that we're hearing, but the bus drivers driving the children as well.
Right.
It would be nothing but pure anarchy, according to law enforcement, if we were to allow these sick people to use this plant medically.
Which is always strange. The bus driver thing is always strange for me to hear when you consider that it's perfectly legal for these bus drivers to be on all sorts of different sorts of medications that might not be good for bus drivers, and nobody ever talks about that.
And I think it's just the law enforcement officers are watching The Simpsons too much, and they're thinking that every bus driver is just like Otto. And that's not my understanding of how we have bus drivers in this country.
Oh, well put. And the thing that always surprises me about this, these law enforcement claims, they're always the same claims over and over and over again. And I can see this gaining some traction in 1997 or 98 before there are, you know, 13 medical marijuana states. But what's your opinion on how these people that support these law enforcement ideas, where are they coming from? Haven't they been paying attention to the other medical marijuana states?
I think that some of them have, and I think they're becoming more reasonable the more that they pay attention. But otherwise, I think that these politicians are very concerned about getting reelected, and they do not see a positive or a favorable vote from their half helping them get reelected. I think that this could only hurt them when it comes to reelection, and that's what they're concerned about, is getting reelected so that they can continue to do that job down at the Capitol.
What are you doing with Illinois Normal to help convince the public and these legislators that a vote in support of medical marijuana is good for their electoral chances, and fighting against medical marijuana means they could possibly lose their seat?
Well, we're trying to get patients who live in their districts to contact the legislators. Otherwise, Illinois Normal, we've developed a bunch of flyers that we've been distributing. We have postcards that we're trying to get people to mail to the legislators. And, you know, trying to get more active in the community of some of these legislators who we feel are on the fence, you know, getting them aware of how many cancer patients are in their district who could potentially benefit from this. Or we're setting up screenings of Waiting to Inhale, the documentary, so that we can invite them, and that they would you know, ever show up to that, they might learn a few things. But unfortunately, we have not had any legislators show up to any of those documentary screenings.
That's sad. How can the folks out there listening in Illinois or nearby, if they want to get involved with this, how can they help you out?
The easiest way that people can help pass medical cannabis legislation in Illinois would be to call their legislators down in Springfield. And the phone number to contact them would be 217-782-2000. And that's the state directory. And have the operator connect them to their state representative and their state senator's office and tell them to vote in favor of Senate Bill 1381, as well as House Bill 2514. And after they do that, it's always helpful to call the governor's office and tell one of his staff members that he thinks that, or that they think that he should sign this legislation into law.
Yeah, it's a recurring theme we get here on The Stash about, you know, calling your legislatures, call your legislature. And a lot of times people are intimidated by that idea, or they might think that, oh, what can I do? I'm just one person. It really doesn't matter. Can you give our folks an idea of how important these calls are and how the legislators really take them seriously?
Well, I think that the more that the legislators hear from their constituents and from their districts, from people supporting this, the more likely they are to think that this isn't such a fringe issue or that there isn't any support behind this. And if people make the phone calls, you know, they can always write a letter or send an email or just drop by the legislator's district office and, you know, pop in there and talk to the secretary or whoever might be available and say, hey, I support this legislation. I haven't forgotten about it. You know, keep me updated with how it progresses, and I hope that we can count on your vote. Because these legislators are supposed to represent us, they are supposed to listen to our concerns, and when we tell them to vote a certain way, hopefully they do listen, and if they don't, then they should be held responsible for how they voted.
All right. Well, looking forward to the summer and in general here, if people want to get involved with Illinois Normal, how can they contact you, and do you have any special events or meetings coming up?
We do have the Global Marijuana March coming up on May 2nd in Chicago, and we're currently looking to hold a couple more screenings towards the end of April here, and possibly even an activist training seminar that people can come to learn how to become more politically active and help this issue. Otherwise, they can always go to the website, www.illinoisnormal.org, or they can call me at 847-341-0591. And it's been real busy for me, so I've been kind of slacking on getting all my emails and phone calls caught up. But by all means, if they'd want to contact me directly, they can, and I'll get back to them at my earliest convenience once when I'm not too overwhelmed down at the Capitol trying to get these votes.
Boy, I know how you feel about being overwhelmed by email. Dan Lynn is the executive director of Illinois Normal. Check him out on the web at illinoisnormal.org. That is, spell out the whole state, illinoisnormal.org. And Dan, thanks again for joining us here, and good luck with everything in Springfield.
Thank you, Russ.
Hello, this is Webb Hubble. Life insurance is now available for responsible marijuana smokers. For years, responsible marijuana smokers have not been able to access affordable life insurance products. Normal uniquely supports cannabis consumers. Two carriers have already agreed to offer all of their traditional life insurance products at all levels without excluding individuals who smoke marijuana responsibly. Help Normal and help yourself. If you've been declined for life insurance, are paying above market premiums, or simply want to know what now may be available in the way of insurance for marijuana smokers, contact me at info@mclaughlinonline.com or simply call me at 202-293-5566.
The battle to end adult marijuana prohibition can sometimes seem endlessly frustrating and impossible to overcome. One way we bond as a community and draw strength to continue is by rejuvenating our spirit through art and music. The Marijuana Music Awards exist to recognize those sonic artists in all genres of music who feature a ganja-friendly message to motivate and inspire all the cannabis community. Our Daily Toker Tunes, brought to you by MarijuanaMusicAwards.com, feature the finest in blues, rock, jazz, hip-hop, rap, reggae, country, bluegrass, and dance music to enhance that 420 feeling and refresh all you stashers for another day on the front lines of the drug war. Enjoy this cut from MarijuanaMusicAwards.com and visit our blog at stash.normal.org to learn how you can vote for your favorites and enter your Toker Tunes in the 2009 Marijuana Music Awards. Variety Tuesday brings us Sweet Hydro by Sean Reefer and the Resin Valley Boys, winners of Best Country in both 2007 and 2008's Marijuana Music Awards. The group also won Best Country and Western Act in both 2005 and 2006's Houston Music Awards. Sean Reefer formed the Resin Valley Boys Band with the goal of bringing back the sounds of classic country and western swing music back to a world that had forgotten how to two-step. Sean and the boys quickly built a reputation as the swinginest band from Houston, Texas. The group have appeared on stage with national acts and Texas legends and have sung across the whole state of Texas. Currently, they're in the studio recording material for a new CD. Check out the latest on Sean Reefer and the Resin Valley Boys at myspace.com/resinvalleyboys. And registered stashers, you can get an MP3 download of this tune. It's Variety Tuesday's Sean Reefer and the Resin Valley Boys with Sweet Hydro.
Oh. Oh, I'm Alan St. Pierre, Executive Director of Normal. Have you heard about the new super pot that's supposedly 20 times more potent than your father's Woodstock weed? Don't believe the hype. Marijuana's THC potency has always varied, even in the 60s and 70s. And the drug czar's numbers are full of, well, exaggerations. While no intoxicant is harmless, cannabis is non-toxic and far safer than alcohol. No matter how much you smoke, of whatever potency, you cannot die of a marijuana overdose. Potency is irrelevant anyway. More potent pot just means you smoke less of it, meaning less harmful smoke in your lungs. This is a prime example of harm reduction in action. Besides, the government already allows the prescription of THC pills. Its commercial brand name is Marinol, and it's 100% potent. Meanwhile, the federal government won't allow dying people to use natural marijuana, no matter what the potency. Does this make sense to you? Learn the facts about pot. Visit NORML.org today.
Legalization, decriminalization, lowest law enforcement priority, medical marijuana, ganja sacrament, consumer cannabis, industrial hemp. The world of marijuana law reform involves many different aspects of cannabis that intersect nearly every public policy discussion in America, including healthcare, the economy, global climate change, law enforcement and prisons, immigration, religion, free speech, energy policy, and war. Now we take a look at how re-legalizing marijuana will change the world in our normal daily audio stash, Cannabis Conversations.
Legislation is moving forward all across the United States to help protect the sick, disabled, dying, and sense-threatened people who can be helped with the use of medical marijuana. And one such state is Minnesota, the Gopher State. And joining us from Minnesotans for Compassionate Care is Chris DeLaForest, who's a spokesman for the organization. And Chris, welcome back to the stash.
Russ, it's great to be back.
Now, the two bills that we're interested in here, this would be House File 292 and Senate File 97. Can you give us a breakdown of what those two bills would do for Minnesotans?
Right. These bills are similar in many ways to the medical marijuana laws found in the 13 states that have effective medical marijuana laws. Just some of the meat of the issue here in Minnesota. We actually have companion bills in the House and in the Senate, and they differ slightly. One way in which they are similar is they would allow sick and dying patients with a doctor's recommendation to possess up to 2.5 ounces of processed marijuana. In the House version, there is a limit of 6 plants, and in the Senate version, there is a limit of 12 plants. What's unique about Minnesota's law is the heart, really, of Minnesota's law would be a state-regulated, state-supervised dispensary system of nonprofits, which also includes a provision for personal cultivation, but we really see the heart of our bill trying to get ahead of the curve, if you will, in what's new in medical marijuana laws and having a dispensary system where patients can have people with the knowledge and experience regarding marijuana cultivation cultivate the best possible medicine for them.
That would be good that the patients would be able to find better access. We found that in some of the states that didn't provide for any sort of dispensary system that the patients sometimes go without. And so that's good thinking on your guys' part. Another issue that's come up with other medical marijuana states is the workplace rights of medical marijuana patients. Do your bills address the issue of workplace rights?
Russ, they do. We have a provision that's found in many other states that forbids a patient from being terminated solely for having marijuana metabolites in their system.
Excellent. That is good, because that's the problem we find is that so many of these workplaces require some sort of drug screening, a urine screen usually, and it's those metabolites that don't prove any sort of impairment whatsoever that are catching these patients. And that's good to see that this was thought of. So with these bills moving forward, what is the latest status as far as committees and how soon we could expect the full legislature to be voting on these?
Well, Russ, people who support common sense medical marijuana law should rejoice regarding the news out of Minnesota. Last week, House File 292 passed the House Public Safety Oversight Policy Committee, and that was, without a doubt, the most difficult challenge that we faced with respect to the legislative process. We thought that if the bill was not going to survive the legislative process, that is the committee where it would happen. We prevailed on a 9-6 vote. Of course, that's not to say it's just a downhill run from here, but that was undoubtedly the biggest hurdle that we faced. And so we're extremely happy to have passed that committee on a pretty decisive margin of 9-6. And so what happens next is that House file goes to the Finance Committee in the House. Over in the Senate, the companion bill will be heard in the Finance Committee this coming Thursday morning. And then from there, it's on to the floor of the House and the Senate.
Excellent. So people that want to get involved and help out in getting these passed, what can they do? Who can they call? Where can they go?
Russ, folks in Minnesota or around the world who want to help Minnesota's cause can go to minnesotacares.org. That's minnesotacares, one long word, .org, and you can be directed to the legislators and opinion makers who matter in Minnesota, and you can let them know that you support common sense medical marijuana laws.
How have the media been reacting to this medical marijuana push here in Minnesota, your local media?
The media has covered the issue well, Russ. Of course, being a spokesperson for the group, I always want more media coverage, but we've received very, very positive media coverage thus far, and we've received a lot of support because of it.
Excellent. And Minnesota is a pretty diverse state, going from, you know, St. Paul and the Twin Cities area, pretty urban environs, to very rural environs all across the state. How does the issue play with the people of Minnesota?
As is the case in most other states, Russ, on the whole, Minnesotans support this issue. The last poll that we have regarding medical marijuana in Minnesota shows that in the aggregate, 64% of those surveyed support medical marijuana law. What's more interesting is a lot of individual legislators here in Minnesota have surveyed the issue on their own. They've sent surveys to their constituents back home and asked them how they feel about medical marijuana law. And every survey that I have seen has come back with a majority supporting medical marijuana, including approval numbers going as high as 70 and 71% in some districts.
Yeah, that sounds like what we get from all across the country. One other question I'm wondering, just a little bit aside from these medical marijuana bills, but looking to the federal level, where eventually there is going to have to be some solution that reconciles these state and federal laws. The state of Minnesota is kind of in flux right now with one of your Senate candidates being unable to be seated at the moment with a series of legal challenges. But do you have any reading from your current senator and either of the two men who might be your incoming senator as to their feelings on medical marijuana and if they'd support any push at the federal level to do something to reconcile these laws?
Well, certainly, I think it's fair to say that the three of them certainly have, I think, avoided staking a position on the issue where they can. We're very hopeful that we can get them to join colleagues in getting the federal government to move forward because, as you rightly note, Russ, some type of federal solution is going to have to come at some point. Obviously, we have all celebrated and cheered the change in policy at the Department of Justice, which, of course, remains somewhat of a question given what happened out in San Francisco last week. But we are certainly heartened by what's happening with the Obama administration, at least in words so far.
Chris, before we wrap things up, is there anything else you'd like to tell folks about the Minnesota Cares project or medical marijuana in the state of Minnesota?
Well, again, I would really encourage folks to get involved and go to minnesotacares.org. Russ, the next big challenge I think we are going to face is dealing with the governor. And we're going to have to convince the governor that the people of the state want medical marijuana laws. So if they go to minnesotacares.org and in the spirit moves them to contact legislators, I also hope they'll take a moment to contact Governor Tim Pawlenty as well.
Yeah, Governor Pawlenty's been pretty outspoken on this issue in a bad way for our side. Does the state of Minnesota have any mechanism where a bill can become law without his signature, where he can kind of stake a neutral position?
Well, Russ, there are a few different ways, actually. One thing the governor can do in Minnesota is he can simply let a law come into being without his signature. Our Constitution mandates that if the governor takes no action, the bill becomes law after a short period of time. And there are a couple exceptions to that, but we'll leave it at that for right now. Another thing that can happen is a veto override could happen. Two-thirds of each body could override a gubernatorial veto. The third way medical marijuana law could become law in Minnesota is if we take it to the ballot. There is a mechanism whereby we could go to the ballot in 2010 and simply make it the law of the state without the governor's action at all.
Excellent. Well, Christy LaForest is a spokesman for Minnesota Cares. Check them out at Minnesotans for Compassionate Care, excuse me. Check them out at minnesotacares.org. And thanks for joining us with updates on Minnesota's medical marijuana legislation.
Always happy to talk with you, Russ.
Thank you for downloading the Normal Daily Audio Stash, the growing truth about cannabis. We are produced by the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws in Washington, D.C.
Our executive producer is Alan St. Pierre. Our deputy director is Paul Armentano. Our webmaster is Brian Judy. And web production is provided by Red Aphid Interactive Media. As always, you can catch up on the latest information about marijuana at www.norml.org. And you can interact and download from our Audio Stash blog at stash.normal.org. For everyone here at Normal, I'm your host, Radical Russ Belville, hoping all your harvests are bountiful and your encounters with law enforcement are non-existent. We leave you with the reminder that tomorrow is tax day and your local news station is going to be down at your local post office filming all the last-second filers. Get down there with a Normal tax day protest sign. Tax us! Also, tomorrow morning, 8 a.m. Eastern Time, Alan St. Pierre will be at the steps of the Manhattan Post Office delivering a check for $14 billion to the United States Treasury that represents the savings and revenues that could be made from ending adult marijuana prohibition. Also, this weekend is the 420 weekend, and there's plenty of activities listed on our Normal Daily Audio Stash Activist Agenda at stash.normal.org/agenda. And if you've got an event you need on the calendar, send it in to me at stash@normal.org, and I'll get it posted. I've already received a bunch of them, and I'll be posting them just as fast as I can. And until next time, take care of each other, tokers.